If you turn in your book to page 267, and then go ahead and turn to the book of 2 Corinthians. We don't have a whole lot of time left, but we shall jump back into where we left off. All right, let me give you a running start since it's been a couple of weeks. You see the title of this lesson is Joy in Ministry. Remember I told you that I think a better title for this section would be Joy and Disappointments in Ministry. And you're going to find that a lot in 2 Corinthians. We went through the introduction to this book a couple weeks ago with the top of the page and that shaded box. And I want to pick up from there. I'm going to put some of the same statements back up here that we looked at so we can kind of get a running start. But the most important, to me, the most important thing in the book of 2 Corinthians is a second statement up on the screen where it says that Paul is writing to defend himself. So he is going to be attacked not only by false teachers, but really, even some of the people in, you know, the Christian church, and they're claiming that he has done things and said things that he did not do and did not say. And so he's going to have to defend himself as an apostle. And what I told you a few weeks ago, which I've just never forgotten, and you probably haven't either, is in 2 Corinthians, essentially Paul is going to trim the nose hairs with a weed eater. Right? Okay, kind of get that in your mind, and you'll get a feel for what's going to happen in this letter. So Paul is going to be very direct. He's going to have to defend himself and address some very specific accusations that have come his way. So where we left off as we worked our way through this is, look at that paragraph right above the blanks. It says that false teachers in Corinth mocked his letter, and they claim that Paul was not a true apostle and his teaching did not matter. And so in 2 Corinthians, he's going to prove that he does have authority to teach as an apostle of Christ. How does he prove that? I think we went over the first three of these a couple weeks ago. I'm not going to rehash, but I'm just going to repeat. So number one, he reminds them that his conduct among them was holy. Okay, there was nothing they could lay at his feet as a charge of unholiness or ungodliness as he ministered among them. So his conduct among them was holy. They can't attack him there. He also says that he does not need a letter of recommendation from other churches as he travels about and ministered, because the people of the church in Corinth are his letter. And people can see in their lives that what Paul taught them and how he led them brought about good things in their lives and did not cause harm and did not hurt them in any way. So their lives prove that he was teaching many good things and was not guilty of what his enemies were charging. Chapter 6, we looked at a couple of verses here where basically Paul says, I open my heart to you. Okay, I didn't conceal anything. I think I told you this may be where we left off last time. But when it comes to knowledge and love, you've probably heard this before, but most people really don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. Right? And that's kind of what Paul is saying. Like, I have opened my heart to you. I did not come in just on the external side, but I gave you everything I had as I ministered to you. So again, he's trying to defend himself as an apostle and proving to them that he was the real deal as he ministered among them. Now, I think that takes us to where we left off a couple of weeks ago, and that is in chapter 7 and verse 2. So here's what Paul is going to say in chapter 7, verse 2 for our next blank and proof of his authority to teach. He is going to argue in this letter that he has wronged, corrupted, or defrauded no one. The accusations have come his way that he has corrupted people, that he has wronged people, that he has not been honest and not been faithful with people. And so Paul is going to just address that head on to defend himself. So now if you look in chapter 7, and you'll see how he states this in verse 2. So Paul writes in in this letter. Make room for us in your hearts, and this is the reason. We wronged no one while we were there among you. We corrupted no one while we were there among you. We took advantage of no one while we were there among you. And then Paul adds to, he's very direct, but to kind of soften it a little bit, he says, I do not speak to condemn you, for I have said before that you are in our hearts to die together and to live together. Again, he's bearing his soul, right? He's very compassionate and very loving, and yet he's trying to prove to them that you can look at what we taught and the way we lived, and there's nothing in our ministry and time there that caused you harm. Didn't do anybody wrong. Didn't corrupt you. Because remember, you can walk around. You are the letter, our letter of recommendation when people look at your life. So it's another way that he is trying to prove to them that he has not been, well, he's not been a false apostle like those who were accusing him. Now we get to a big one. So in chapter 11, I think through history, the church history, modern especially, when it comes to the downfall of ministries or ministry leaders, there's always, what, about two or three categories that almost always are there. And one of those categories is a category of money. And all of a sudden you find that somebody's been embezzling money in a ministry. Wasn't it, I can't remember now, a few years ago, the big false church in Houston with Joel Osteen, the false prophet Joel Osteen, and they found all the money in the walls of the bathroom, which I don't know the story with that. But the point is, money can become a downfall in ministry. And I hate to say this. I really hate to say this. But I also do think it's true that sometimes ministers, this really sounds bad, y'all, but sometimes ministers, they're not in it for the right reason. And you can get into a certain type of setting, and the six-figure salaries are there. Big fancy vehicles and second homes and private jets. And listen, I ain't got nothing against it. If God's called you to travel and do what you got to do, you need that, that's fine. Samaritan's Purse, they've got private jets. But you know what? They use those for ministry, right? It's not just for glorifying themselves. But I'm just telling you, money can be a very serious issue in ministry. So here's what Paul does. He's going to show them and tell them, you cannot accuse me in any instant of mishandling a single penny of money in ministry. Because they're accusing it, right? They're trying to destroy him and tear him down. So he says in chapter 11, and we'll read the verse in just a minute, he took no money from them while he was living and teaching there. Wow. You say, why did he do that? Could he have? Yes, he could have, right? Bible makes it very clear. Those who preach the gospel shall make their living by the gospel. It's right in the Bible. So that is right for a church to pay their ministers. But what Paul is saying is, I wanted to make sure nobody could accuse me of being in it for the wrong reason. So he says, as I was there, I didn't take a penny from y'all. I worked with my own hands as a bivocational minister, and I did not want you to have that opportunity to condemn me for being in it for money. Now let's look what he says. So in chapter 11, let's see where we should put in here. I guess we'll start right in verse 7, because in my Bible, under the chapter 11, the little heading, it says, Paul defends his apostleship. Okay, this is kind of where he's trimming their nose hairs with a weed eater, like I told you. He's going to get very direct with them. And in fact, let's do this really quick. Go, let's look at verse 3. I'm just going to skim through this a little bit. Here's Paul's heart. He's, I'm afraid for y'all that just as a serpent deceived Eve by his craftiness, that your minds should be led astray from the simplicity and purity of devotion to Christ. Now look, you got to watch out for false teachers. And Paul says, I'm afraid that there are some teachers who have come in and they're steering you away from the simple gospel that I preached among you. And then here's an example in verse 4. He says, If someone comes and preaches another Jesus whom we have not preached, or you receive a different spirit which you have not received, or a different gospel which you have not accepted, he said, here's a problem. You're bearing with that beautifully. Instead of rejecting false teaching, you are accepting that, and you're going against what we gave you as gospel truth. And it's really starting to get under Paul's skin. Like, if you ever want to see an apostle explode in a righteous indignation, he's going to do that in this letter because he can't take it anymore. He's like, I don't understand. Why are you turning away? Then verse 5. I consider myself not in the least inferior to the most eminent apostles, because, again, the false teachers are saying that Paul is inferior to the real apostles. He's not the real deal. So he had to address that. Verse 6, even if I am unskilled in speech, okay, I may not preach like Billy Graham. I may not have the voice of Adrian Rogers. But even if I am unskilled in speech, yet I am not so in knowledge. I've given you truth. In fact, in every way, we have made this evident to you in all things. Okay, I'm trying to read it with a little bit of anger, because this is how he's writing this letter as he defends himself. And now we get to verse 7. Where he talks about, I haven't taken any money from a ministry. Here's what he says. Did I commit a sin in humbling myself that you might be exalted because I preached the gospel of God to you without charge? Like, let me remind you, when I went there, I didn't come with a price tag on my sleeve. And y'all know I can't stand that, right? Every time we have somebody come to preach for revival, I'm just telling you, if you tell me I will only come if you guarantee him a certain amount of money, I'm just not comfortable with that. It's just not me. Paul said that I didn't come with a price tag, right? I came there and preached without any charge whatsoever. So yeah, I'm guilty of that. Okay, that's what I did for y'all. In fact, he says in verse 8, okay, you know, kind of sense, like he's kind of clipping their nose hairs again. Here's what I did. I robbed other churches and took wages from them so I could serve you. So when I left Macedonia, or I left, you know, a certain church over here and they gave me a love offering, I took that so I could get to you and then charge you a dime and didn't want your money. Don't accuse me of mishandling the funds. So anyway, if you read through that, like I said, he keeps going on with that, how the churches in Macedonia supplied his needs. The point is, he's trying to show them, you cannot accuse me of wrongdoing when it comes to the money in the ministry. That's what he's doing. So he took no money from them while he was living there and teaching there. And I don't know if it's in this passage. It may be a different passage, but he does say somewhere, I work with my own hands. Now, trivia question. Let's have fun. Real quick trivia question. Does anybody remember in the book of Acts, what was the occupation Paul had as he ministered? He was a tent maker, a leather worker, a tent maker. So now think about this. When Paul went to Corinth, more than likely, I'm assuming when he went to Corinth, he found, well, we'll call it a business. He found a business where he could like work part-time with his hands and make what he needed so he could survive, so he would not have to be a burden to the church. It's almost like he sensed that there could be some issues in Corinth. So he's like, I'm going to build a barrier to protect me from your accusations. And the accusations came. And then Paul looks back and says, I am so glad I didn't take a penny from y'all. And he reminds him of that. He shouldn't have to do that, but he is defending his apostleship. Well, let's go back into the end of this chapter. And here's a big one, probably a familiar passage. I think we read it not too long ago. Here's another way he defends his apostleship. If Paul were in it for the money, or if he were in it for an easy road, he didn't get that. And so what he says to them is, let me remind you of the hardships I endured as a true apostle among you. Summary for these verses, Paul suffered for his teaching, showing that he did not do it for profit. Because I can tell you right now, if you are in If you are in ministry, if you are a missionary going into a hard place, and you're going there only for the money, then you're going to be the kind of person to say, give me the easiest location and easiest job you've got. Paul didn't do that, right? Paul said, my ambition is to preach the gospel where people haven't heard it yet. No matter how difficult it is, that's where I'm headed. Now, here's a problem. And you know this. When you stand for truth, you will be persecuted. And that doesn't mean you're going to be martyred. It doesn't mean you'll physically be beaten. But you may lose your job. You may not get the promotion. You will receive ridicule, right? Nobody will understand when you stand for truth. And this is exactly what happened to Paul. And here's what he does. When you get to the end of chapter 11, in verse 23, again, this is, there's some anger as he's writing these words. He's getting the weed eater cranked up, right? He's about to clip some nose hairs. And here's why. There are some accusing Paul of not being the real deal. You're not a servant of Christ. You're not an apostle. You ain't really worked in the trenches. You're in it for the money. And so Paul says, all right, stop for just a minute. Let me tell you what I've been through. Verse 23. Speaking of those who have made these accusations, he says, are they servants of Christ? They're claiming to be. And Paul says, okay. And then my Bible puts this in parentheses. I'm going to speak as if I'm insane for a minute. Okay, I'm going to go out of my mind. And I'm going to pretty much just let you have it. And show you what I've been through. If they're servants of Christ, as they sit on their little velvet padded thrones, if they're servants of Christ, I am far more so. And here's why he says that. Now look at this long list. And we read this recently in a different context. Here's his reminder to them of the authenticity of his ministry. He says, I have been in far more labors. I've been in far more imprisonments. I have been beaten times without number. Now, y'all, if you got beat once, and I mean literally, if you're in Iran or you're in some country where you were hated as a Christian, if you get beaten once, you're probably ready to say, y'all just keep the luggage, put me in a plane, and get me out of here. Right? Paul says, I've been beaten without number. I can't even tell you the number of times I've been beaten. I've often been in danger of death. 5 times I received from the Jews 39 lashes. I mean, they have literally whipped me 5 times, right up to the point of the maximum amount that the law allows. 3 times I was beaten with rods. It's like he's going crazy all of a sudden to prove to them that he's in it for the right reason. I did not choose an easy road, and I'm not doing it for the money. 3 times, or once I was stoned. You remember that first missionary journey? I can't remember the exact city it was right now. And they stoned him and left him for dead. I mean, they thought he was gone. And God allowed him to live. So once he says, I was stoned. 3 times I've been shipwrecked. A night and a day I have spent in the deep. I've been on frequent journeys, in dangers from rivers, dangers from robbers, dangers from my countrymen, the Jews, dangers from the Gentiles, dangers in the city, dangers out in the wilderness, dangers on the sea, dangers among false brethren. Listen, y'all, I didn't get to go home for Christmas. I didn't get to go home for my birthday, right? Listen, I have been out there. I've been through. I've been beaten. I've been in labor, he says, in hardship. I've been through many sleepless nights. That one by itself, you've probably all tasted of. Have you had so much on your mind before you're worried about you can't sleep at night? And it goes more than one night, and then it's a constant, steady headache because you're not sleeping and you're worried and you're stressed. He's dealt with this over and over, many sleepless nights. I've been in hunger and thirst. I've been often without food. I've been in cold. I've been in exposure out in the elements. And then he says, let me tell you what's really been bad. Verse 28, all that stuff I just shared is external stuff. Apart from all the external things, now watch this, there has been the daily pressure upon me of concern for all the churches. So then he says, based on what I just shared with you, and it made me go crazy to say it. Like, I'm going to talk as if I'm insane. I shouldn't even be saying these kinds of things, but I'm trying to defend myself. Then he says in verse 29, okay, after what I just said to you, Corinthians, who there is claiming that you're weak without me also being weak? Who is led into sin without my intense concern? Right? Paul's like, listen, when I hear about issues in your church at Corinth, where you're getting the resurrection wrong, getting the Lord's Supper wrong, there's divisions in the church, it is keeping me up at night. I'm weakened by it. So he says, if I do have to boast, I'm going to boast of what pertains to my weakness. And Paul says that over and over in his writings. I'm not going to boast of myself. I'm going to boast of my struggles and my weakness. So why does he state all of that? Keep it in the context. He states that to defend his authority and his true apostleship in the face of those who are trying to condemn him. Paul, you're in it for the wrong reason. You're after money. You've taken the easy route. And Paul says, I can't take it anymore. Let me share with you what I've been through. I ain't took a penny from y'all. I've just done what God has called me to do. And attack after attack after attack, there's nothing you can lay at my feet as a charge that will stick. Because I've lived my way, my life properly before you. I've taught you truth. And all these other teachers are coming in and now you're turning away from what I've given you and you're following different roads. It's very upsetting to Paul. That's why I say to you the title for this book, lesson, probably should not be Joy in Ministry. It should probably be Joy and Disappointments in Ministry. So that is verses 23 through 29. And we will pick up with that next week because we didn't have quite as much time tonight. And it's already a little tiny bit after 8 o'clock. So I'm going to stop there. We'll finish this up and then turn the page next week. And then we'll see how far we get before we'll have to pause until next year.